Ms. Fremont, would you like me to at least call us to order and get that?
Yeah, that would be great if you could.
Certainly. Okay. All right. Well, good afternoon. I'd like to officially call to order the Arizona State Board Private Post-Secondary Education Complaint Committee meeting at 1:02 on December 12, 2024. Don't mind me. I just don't know the dates that we have here. So the complaint committee may go into executive session for the purposes to obtain legal advice pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A3 on any matter on the agenda. The committee reserves the right to change the order of the agenda items with exception of hearings. Mr. LaMountain, are there any changes to our agenda as of today?
Mr. Romano, members of the committee, there are no changes.
Okay, great. We will run through. Would you take roll call, please?
Mr. Romano.
Here.
Mr. Romano's in attendance. Dr. Leck.
Here.
Dr. Leck is here. And Dr. Boutte. Dr. Boutte is absent today. And then for staff, Keith Blanchard.
Present.
Jacqueline Rome.
Present.
And Super Assistant Attorney General, Seamus Monahan.
Thank you, present.
Nice seeing you, Seamus. How are you?
Nice to see you guys.
All right. Thank you, Mr. LaMountain, for that. The
Romano, Mr. Blanchard, did you actually, you got a hold of this student, correct?
Yeah, just talk to him. He's going to get on.
Okay.
Now, he does have a virus. He doesn't sound very good. And he texted me this morning, said he's in bed, but he still wanted to kind of.
Okay. All right.
So it might be a minute or two, but he'll be on.
Okay. In regards to item number 3 on the complaint committee meeting minutes, for that, I did verify they are posted from that standpoint. Unfortunately, I was not in attendance for that committee meeting, and we do not have the other participant outside of Dr. Leck, who's here. So we can't entertain a motion on that particular item. So we will move that to our main board meeting in the January timeframe. That allows us to advance to item number 4 on the agenda, which is a review, discussion, and possible action on a complaint that we have received from a student for California Southern University. Just as a reminder, and certainly when the student is able to join us here, we do not refer to the student's name. We only refer to the student with their initials for confidentiality based on the recording that we have from that standpoint. So I can see that the student was just able to join us. So let's take a moment. Hello, good afternoon, student. Just for your awareness, we have already started the agenda, but we have not started discussing your complaint matter as of yet. So you haven't missed anything. But I do want to reiterate, in this particular meeting, we do not use student names. We only use initials. So I have guided and directed the participants today who would be involved in this matter that we would only refer to the student as SS in this particular case. So with that, as part of the normal procedure, Mr. Blanchard, is there anything additional or any new information that you would like to provide to the board at this time or the committee at this time?
No, I would like to at least put it on record. I reread it, and I was talking to Mr. LaMountain about it today. So there is an exemption specific in Rule R-439-403 actually states the board shall not accept a complaint regarding grade dispute or licensing employment practices or compliance with American with Disabilities Act. So this complaint will be specific to, and it was spelled out by SS regarding lack of support and the communication between him, SS, and the institution regarding his ADA request.
Thank you, Mr. Blanchard. I appreciate that. As a matter of record, and just for the benefit of the audience, as Mr. Blanchard had said, and sometimes depending on the complaint that comes through, it can feel like this committee is trying to address or hear all the complaints that have come forward. In this particular case, the complaint that was provided, we have limited scope as a committee to be able to review this complaint and what it looks like. So in this particular case, although we do have a fairly full picture of the complaint and the concerns that have been addressed, what we're really focused on today is understanding, has the school met its obligation in regards to timely communication with the student, and what that has looked like overall. We will address any matters associated with the code of conduct of the school and what that looks like. We have received information that we've had as a chance to review. Our normal procedure is to just give opportunity to the student to address the committee as a whole, to share any additional information for the student SS. Please understand we appreciate the fact that we are limited in what we'll be able to discuss and review today, but we are certainly open to hearing your position. We also, as our responsibility, have had the chance to review your complaint and the school's response associated with that and all the materials as well. So I don't want you to feel obligated to try and restate all of the complaint and the history associated with it, as myself and my fellow committee member, Dr. Leck, have had a chance to review that. That said, if there's additional information that you would like to provide or additional color or context, I would just ask you to do so in the frame of the school's response and communication with you, and not pertaining to the matter of any accommodation associated with ADA.
Okay.
So with that, I'd like to welcome you, student SS, and I invite you to add any additional context that you would like to at this time.
Well, there's no, as you have stated, you have all of the information prior. What I was asking for, I do believe that there's nothing more to add to it. It is a university that is 100% online, therefore immediate response should be done to the student and for the student's sake. You do have the rest of the information, so like you said, I will not reiterate that information.
Okay. I do have a few clarifying questions to just try and appreciate and understand, and it's very possible my colleague, Dr. Leck, will also have some questions for clarity. As I was reviewing the complaint, it was difficult for me to appreciate the expectations you had in regards to the school's timely response. When I looked through the records, it would appear as though the school was responding, but it was unclear what your expectation was in what a timely response was. I know the school does provide in their reviews the time that they will review things and look to get back with students. But I was unclear on what your expectation was, and I didn't know if you'd be able to share that with me.
Yes, this all started when the lack of response coming from the former chair within a certain amount of time frame. And that was my main point of contact that I was supposed to have for my dissertation. When this was not being met, I filed the complaint with the ombudsman, as you probably have read. And I heard nothing back on my complaint whatsoever from the ombudsman. Next thing you know, I am being sent an email from the department chair of a warning of my conduct with the possibility of dismissal from the university, instead of contacting me to talk about my side of what was going on and why I was filing the complaint in the first place. As the new chair came on in my committee after selection, my complaint was warranted because the new chair, whom I in the committee that I have, they are amazing. The new chair said that she called me. She couldn't figure out, well, where's your information? She wasn't transferred all of my stuff. Some of my grades were not posted. So my my claim on the former chair was valid. Yet when I did send that information over again to the ombudsman and over to the chair, over the director of the program, I'm just dismissed. The dean dismisses. She never really says or comes in as a leader to oversee her subordinates to make sure that things are done properly. And then that's what I mean by not communicating. I'm seen more as a problem and instead of an honors student that's doing well and has a valid reason for the complaint. And so therefore, let's go through the right protocols and speak with them to see whether or not what is going on and then countercheck to see if the check with the new chair, is that valid? If so, then we do owe him an apology and to remove the this warning off of my record as my attorney had asked them to do. So that helps to clear it up.
I appreciate the additional context. I think where I was still trying to get clarity, when you had reached out, what is the expectation that you have in regards to when sending something to the school, how much time you expect to elapse or not elapse between receiving a return response from them?
Well, it's 24 hours, I would think, 24 to 48 hours. That's usually proper business protocol. If you're going to be on 100% online, I think that should apply. But when it's ignored, or if it's anything that comes back at me in a negative tone, that doesn't help the situation. You know, excuse me, I've been with a virus fighting this for the last couple of days, so I'm not quite myself.
We certainly hope you feel better and you're able to get some rest. In regards to the expectation around the 24 to 48 hours, is there anywhere within the school documentation that you've received that has set that expectation as an absolute versus a desire to want to meet that expectation of a 48-hour response, for example?
No, just having a business management degree and an MBA, that's usually the business drill format. You tend to all correspondence within that time frame if you want to do good business. This is, again, an online program. Therefore, I would think that would adhere to the same business practices. Since nobody answers the phone when you call, time is ticking. And so that's where I applied those practices.
I appreciate that piece. And thank you for confirming that. It doesn't sound like the school has provided anything in writing guaranteeing that type of response rate. That's
no.
Helpful for me.
Yeah.
Certainly understand your position in regards to your expectations of a business and what that looks like as well, though. So I do want to acknowledge that.
Thank you. So
I think for me, as we're kind of going through and you've been able to clarify that, as you've stated, I have had a chance to review the other materials and see the back and forth that has occurred there in regards to the communication between you, the school, and the time window in which that has occurred. I don't have any other clarifying questions for you, Student SS, but I will take a moment to see if Dr. Leck does have any additional questions for you.
Hi, Student SS. I just want to piggyback off of what Mr. Romano's questions were. I also have a master's degree in business, so I understand what you're saying as far as perhaps like communication, right? I send an email and someone responds to me. But when we're talking about a doctoral program, what I'm assuming we're talking about dissertation components as of like parts of the book, are you referring to communication as an email? Is your hope that someone's going to turn around portions of assignments of the dissertation within the same amount of time?
Well, that's a good question. And I would say that would adhere to both, especially the dissertation, because the relationship between the chair and the student is vital. That is the main goal, which takes off all of that other responsibility that the university has to deal with regarding the dissertation. So that's why she or he is my main form of contact. My chair is very responsive. She's just check. How well she calls me if need be. She does everything that you would think a chair would do, and I commend her highly for how she responds. The former chair did not. So I hope that explains your gives you the right answer you're looking for.
Okay. It does. I think just having have a background in the whole teaching dissertation, that, you know, it's a very different. I mean, I understand where it's a business, but it's also an education, right? It's schooling, and the chairs have multiple responsibilities, multiple students, and I understand that that's your preference. I'm just trying to understand, because I think the communication part I get, you know, I send an email, I can email back, but trying to make sure that you're helping a student, you know, with their project. And making sure that everything is sound and firm so that the student is successful. You know, that's like grading assignments is a pretty big, that's a pretty big lift. So if your faculty right now, your chair is able to do that, I think that's amazing. But that's quite a big ask.
That is very true. Well, I'm sorry to jump in. That's very true. But when I have, when the former chair sending multiple messages to ask her, what can you, you know, update me, and then to hear the new chair saying that she hadn't graded things like she was supposed to, she didn't send a transfer over certain information like she was supposed to have gone, and she left prior to her actual departure date, that kind of validates still what my complaint was. I did not appreciate the university warning me about over emailing, which with my again, my condition, the person in charge, I would assume, would be a doctor, a PhD or PsyD that understands the different types of behavioral disorders and things students may have in this program. That's, you know, and that a thorough evaluation would have been taken place before you send out a warning, which was unnecessary and not right. And it wasn't valid. So,
Dr. Luck, if I could just follow up to that question. It does appear that the school provides guidance or windows of time that they have to review the materials from what we went through. And it didn't look as though the school had violated those time windows that I could see. But I wasn't sure, student SS, if you were provided other guarantees or anything documented that would have changed that window of time to something outside of what the school has provided in a published state.
No, I have not. But when my attorney wrote a letter, we filed the appeal about the complaint, my warning, on my record, and it was sent over. And I didn't hear it. We had to do it within a certain timeline. The attorney wanted to know what their rules and regulations were. I sent that to him so that we could get that in order specifically so that we wouldn't have this hiccup of whiplash saying, well, you didn't submit it in the right time frame, which is what the dean tells me in an email, which was a lie, because we formulated this to make sure it was sent on time. Then it goes cold turkey. The requests were valid. Remove this. He found nothing that was warranted for what they were trying to say in their claim against me, and that they should know what the disorder does, and how an online application only affects somebody with this type of anxiety disorder. They went cold turkey again. So I'm left to just, I'm dismissed, and that's what I'm understanding.
I appreciate that. And Mr. Lamont, I'll jump to you here in just a second. But just to confirm that what you were describing there was the letter that the attorney sent on your behalf to the school in regards to the complaint and the concern that you wanted to rectify. In this case, I'm referring to the materials that you brought forward for review and for consideration. Mm-hmm. The school hasn't provided anything to you that would, in writing, that would has guaranteed they would shorten that window to something different than what they have provided on a published date. Is that accurate?
Yeah, as far as if you're regarding the dissertation and being to go, yes. Being able to go my own pace, like I this last doc project too, we were done a month prior to its end. So I'm sitting here waiting and waiting and waiting. Well, okay, when we should be able to be released and go on to the next one. Finally, Doc Project 3 has been released, but I had all that other time. I could have been working on it. So that's where I'm talking about. It seems like I am. Even though I can go my own pace, the authority controls, no, you're going to have to just wait until everybody else gets to this point, which makes no sense. As a straight A student, this makes no sense at all. And that's where I was going with that.
Yeah. I think where we have authority and responsibility to at least make determinations around if the school publishes some type of expectation and fails to meet that expectation and then ultimately ignores that expectation, and that's what brings the complaint forward. Right now I'm trying to put together where the school in their published time frame has missed the expectations that they've communicated, understanding that a legal matter when attorneys or complaints come back and forth, there is that can sometimes be dealt with differently in non-published timeframes just because of the complexity of the matters and what that looks like. But Mr. Lamont, you've been extremely patient. I apologize.
So Mr. Romano and Dr. Leck, for the record, I want to make it clear that the student did have a letter from an attorney that I believe has been provided to you, but the student is not being represented by an attorney, by counsel. We did receive another communication from an attorney, from the initial attorney, I believe within the last few days, making it clear that he is not representing this particular case and the student in this matter. So I just for the record, I wanted to make it very clear, which is why the attorney is not on this call.
Thank you for that. I appreciate it. Dr. Leck, any more clarifying questions for the student at this time?
I don't think so. I think I have some for the institution.
Okay. Student SS, thank you very much for answering our questions. Now, just so you may not be familiar with it, we'll now take a moment with the school to try and understand some and ask them some clarifying questions as well. And it's very plausible that we may come back to you for additional information. I would ask, though, if you could, because it does happen, understandably, there may be moments where you want to interject and try and clarify the school's point, just as they have done for you to give you the opportunity to answer. We would respectfully ask that you provide them with that same opportunity as we go through the process with them. And then, as I mentioned, if we have additional clarifying questions for you, we will come back to you, okay?
Certainly. Thank you.
All right. So with that, do we have a representative from the school that could introduce themselves? And if you would, again, understanding that we have had a chance to review that, you don't need to necessarily restate everything, but you may have some additional information that you would like to share.
Yes, I can start. I'm Dr. Connor Brawl, and I'm the Vice Provost for AIUS. Which Cal Southern is a member institution of. And joining me today on the call, we have our regulatory representative, which is Jill DeAtley, as well as our ombudsman. I guess I shouldn't have said names, but I said the names. So
You're welcome to say school institution.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
Not a problem.
Yeah, so I will be very brief because I believe that we have submitted quite a bit of evidence showing our communication, our responsiveness to the student. But I do want to just reiterate the current status is the learner is enrolled in the program, in the degree program. He just started a DP3 course on 12-1. has also been meeting with Director of Clinical Training, discussing options for optional internships. So at this point, he is progressing in his program at a rate that we would anticipate that all of our students would be progressing at. And I also believe that, you know, looking at the evidence that we provided, sufficient evidence to show that we have followed our policies, we have taken the student's concerns seriously and have given him resolutions in a timely manner, as well as responded to him in a timely manner.
Thank you, Dr. Brawl. Couple things. One, just for clarity, we appreciate the fact that the student is still engaged with the process, enrolled, and progressing. We also understand that based on the investment of students and how far they are in the progress of their work there, it can sometimes be very complicated and difficult for the student to discontinue their education as that level of commitment or sacrificing or giving that up. And so I just state that as a point of clarity that although we appreciate the students still in it and progressing, we don't interpret that as the school's still meeting their expectations of what the student is entitled to and consistent with the school policies and procedures. But thank you for sharing that update on the student progress. For me, as I was going through this, I had a chance to review your code of conduct, the manual as well, the expectations and the timing associated with it. As I shared with the student SS, I couldn't really find anywhere where the school was outside of their published response rates or reviews from that matter. And so and with the information that you provided, there was nothing there to really support that the school was outside of that expectation either. So I really don't have any clarifying questions for you unless there's something additional that we're unaware of or that was not provided that would suggest that maybe the school did fall short in regards to their timeliness and communication. So I'll just offer that up as an opportunity if the school has any additional information that they would like to share at this time that would suggest that maybe the school wasn't as responsive as they could have otherwise been.
No, we do not have anything additional that aligns with our assertion as well, is that we did comply with our policies and procedures.
Dr. Leck, do you have any questions for clarity?
I did have a question. I'm trying to boil this down to the parts that we can actually even address. And one of them is the complaint that the former chair did not follow the grading responses, right, which you have the timeline of the 7 days for individual chairs and you have 14 days for committee responses. When you received the feedback or complaint by the student that wasn't followed for the previous chair, did you guys look at that and see whether or not that was validated? Because sometimes I know chairs, when the chair changes, that the chair that's new doesn't necessarily know or see. Like they don't, you know what I mean, they only have access to some information. They don't have the access to the totality of information. So in my experience, we have people that will go and look. Did you guys do that?
We did not find any evidence that any of the chairs did not meet the grading timelines that they had. So we could not find any evidence of that.
Okay, so I just want to go down this bunny hole real quick. The student stated that the new chair said that some things were not graded. Did you guys follow up with the new chair to see what it was that they were talking about? Or maybe can you, to try and help this?
We did do an investigation, as did legal. When the student hired an attorney, our legal department did do an investigation and again found no evidence that any of the chairs had gone outside of any of the grading policies or timelines. We are not aware of of any of the current chair having stated that the previous chair did anything wrong.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Are you saying that's new information to you as an institution, that your chair mentioned that to the student? At least the student alleges that the chair made that statement. Is that new information to you?
I will defer to our ombudsman to see if that was in a previous complaint or Ms. Diatley.
We can't hear you, Ms. Diatley.
While she's working on her sound, are you guys able to hear me okay?
We can.
Yes.
Wonderful. My name is Brandy Regal. I'm the ombudsman for the institution. In our review, we found no documentation supporting that claim. So we did not find any, as Dr. Brawl had previously mentioned, we did not find any concerns with the grading practice. I would also like to mention when the concerns were first brought to our attention, it was over the 4th of July weekend when the university was closed on the 4th and the 5th. So there is to be, due to holiday weekend campus closure, there could be some communication delay because our staff are taking breaks just like the rest of the university and our students. So we did express that to SS as well as our staff with the holiday. There may be a slight delay, but we did not find any delay that would have been more than the norm along any sort of holiday or long weekend that any university may see.
Can you hear me now?
We can.
Okay, and I think just to tie together the timeline, I think the initial concern was following the submission on July 2nd. By Monday, the 8th, we had been in communication with the learner and had a response from the dean by the 10th. So, I mean, that was more about the timing and the turnaround of the grading. That was the only concern, the major concern we had with that particular chair.
Thank you very much. I think that was the only thing I needed to understand.
Given now we've had a chance to kind of talk that through, just for a point of clarity, the student had referenced the fact of a warning had been, or an email had been provided, highlighting the code of conduct expectations for a student and the concerns associated with maybe some of the recent actions of that student in the way of communication. I'm trying to appreciate, is that actually part of the student's record at this point, or was that more of a matter of just trying to help guide the student? There seems to be a question of feeling that is part of the student's record, and I'm just trying to understand, is that part or not?
We do keep record of code of conduct violations of any student when they are committed. So the warning that student SS is referencing, it was given by a department. We do empower all the departments within our university to feel that if a student has violated our code of conduct, to give a strike one, if you will, type of code of conduct warning, which is what this was. We keep record of it because they can accumulate over time as they move up the chain, so to speak. Continued violations of our conduct can lead to a final warning or potentially a dismissal if they are numerous or egregious enough in nature. But they are not in any way stopping SS or any other student who would get a warning from moving on in a program or continuing in any other way in communication or otherwise.
And I'm assuming that means it's not public. A warning is not, like, it would never be released as a record on the student. It's not public. It's just internal.
The only time I've seen in the past where it's been released is if, for example, the FBI is doing a background check and they ask if there's been any conduct history on behalf of a student. So sometimes in those cases, we do have to release that a warning has been issued. But other than that, it's not on a transcript, for example.
I may have missed this. Do you have a published procedure or progression in regards to what the expectation is around a communication prior to a written warning for a student's opportunity to be heard prior to a warning being issued, or is it just published that the institution at any time can provide a written warning without consideration of hearing from the student's perspective?
It is more of the latter, whereas a student can be issued a warning. Now, if it was, say, a verbal conversation and the student says a swear word, an advisor can have the opportunity to say, hey, that's not the kind of professional language we appreciate here. Can we please tone it down? And maybe that's enough. But our department representatives have the autonomy to decide if a warning is necessary or not. In this case, they felt it was, so they issued the written warning. And then our policy does also state that our warnings are not appealable.
I'm sorry, what was that last part?
Our policy states that warnings are non-appealable.
Okay. So essentially, if I understand you correctly, a staff member could issue a warning in written format on a student's record. The student does not have the opportunity to be heard in consideration of if that information is accurate or not. It's non-appealable. So the only action the student can take is publishing a complaint if they are in disagreement with the warning that they have received. Is that my understanding? That's a question to the institution.
Brandy, do you want to take that one? I'm not sure if she's frozen. Anna, can you hear?
Yeah, I can hear. But yeah,
I'll restate the question.
Yeah.
The question is, it, from what I understand, a staff member can write a warning that goes on a student's record. The student does not have an opportunity to appeal that or debate that or even be heard on that matter, whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent, or it's not appealable. So the only thing the student can do is issue a complaint. Is that accurate?
Well, that is part of the written warning is the lowest level of our code of conduct policy. So, you know, they cannot appeal it. However, if they have, because it's not part of a published record, it's not, you know, anything formal. It's basically just what it is, right? A written warning. However, if they are given something more serious, if there is an allegation, if it continues, or if there's a more serious allegation, we do have a code of conduct committee that has a formal process that does involve the student, hearing the students aside of any issue that would get to that level. And then we also have the code of conduct would make a decision after hearing all sides. And then the code of conduct committee, if the student is not in agreement with the code of conduct committee's more formal decision, there is a final appeals board that the student can go to. So there is a process outside of after the informal written warning, which is the lowest level, which this was, for a student to address and raise concerns if they have an issue with the conduct decisions.
That said, it sounds like there is if it does not advance past that written warning, there is no action the student can take to be heard or considered for it to be removed from their record. And yes, I'm reaching here, but let's just say that a particular student would be entertaining employment with the Federal Bureau of Investigation, which decides to do a background check on that student, and you release the warning letter that the student did not have a chance to share their perspective or viewpoint on, and that impacts their employment. From the scenario that you described, that seems plausible. Is that?
I'm sorry. I heard the scenario you were giving, but I didn't understand the question on that. Sorry.
I think I'm just asking is that the student cannot appeal nor have that warning removed from their record, depending on who does a background check, potentially for employment or other purposes, and reaches out to the school would provide a document that the student never had a chance to argue or offer their perspective. Is that accurate?
That would be an issue or an answer for Brandy, but I don't know if she can hear us yet. I do not know what the process is. I do not believe it would ever be an employer could ever get information on a written warning, but Brandy, can you confirm that?
Yeah, I apologize greatly for the issues I was having with my audio. I can hear everyone now, thankfully. So in that scenario, if they ask for anything kind of that level, a lot of times those requests come in and they really only want to know if a student had been dismissed due to conduct or if there was something on a permanent record or a transcript in that regard. And a written warning would not fall into that egregious of a category. But if they wanted to know even down to a level one warning, we would be able to provide rationale as to what it was. Did they use an appropriate swear word? Was it being harassing in nature? You know, the various aspects that could be considered a code of conduct violation, you know, depending on the code. So we would be able to provide a rationale as to that code, but to the answer, I mean, we do not, because we consider warnings not appealable, we would be able to put a caveat in the answer that per our code, the student was unable to appeal the warning.
Mr. Romano, you have your hand up.
Well, thank you, Mr. Romano and Dr. Leck. Big concerns with that policy. I've sat as a dean of students in the past, and I've had FBI and others come in and ask for the exact type of information that you just said that you may or may not provide. I would have serious concerns over who's the gatekeeper, who makes that determination about whether or not a written, non-appealable written warning from a member of your campus community would have on that particular student. I guess the question that I would want, as a regulator, I'm now going to be focused on this, and there's some things that I'm going to start asking you guys questions after this conversation is over, because I'm concerned about it. The other piece would be, where does your creditor fall in on non-appealable warnings to students? I just, you guys are, if I believe correctly, you're WASC, right? Warning Health Institution, or UHLC?
We are HLC, but the written warning is not part of our formal process.
So it's an informal process.
It's an informal written warning.
I'm done, but I'm going to have a conversation with Ms. Diatley later because I'm concerned about that policy, something you should probably address, something that I'll reach out to HLC on as well. So.
And I would like to add, because I brought this, I started this with the public part of it, and the reason being is I'm similar to Kevin, where my experience would be if it's a non-disciplinary letter of warning, then you would never release it in a disciplinary record, right? And that would be appropriate. If the student doesn't have the opportunity to participate because it's low level and it's non-disciplinary and you're just letting them know when it's in writing, then the non-disciplinary makes it not a disciplinary record that you would release upon someone inquiring, which is why I was asking.
Thank you, Dr. Locke. Mr. Blanchard?
Yeah, Ms. Riegel, did you say that any staff member can submit a warning like that to a student without it going through any, you know, hierarchy?
One kind of informal warning, yes, because the code of conduct, the code could be violated within multiple departments. You can swear at your faculty member, a financial aid advisor, an admissions advisor, et cetera. So we do give that opportunity to those staffs to issue a warning to a student who has violated our code within their particular department.
But does that mean, don't you have a staff that looks at code of conduct and like runs the process that's looking across the institution? So if I'm getting multiple reports, right, I'm getting a report from an advisor, a report from a field experience, I'm getting a report from a chair, I'm combining those up and going, huh, we might have an issue, and start to look at that. But I
certainly
don't, but I wouldn't say all of those reports would go to a centralized person who can look at it versus each individual person being able to send that to the student themselves. Is that what you're saying? Does it go to a group, or each person's firing these off on their own?
So for that warning, the specific department is able to. So a student in a hypothetical situation may receive multiple warnings under different situations. So in March, they may have gotten a warning from an academic advisor. And in September, they may have committed an act that got them a warning from a financial aid advisor. And that's why it's important for us to document, because if we see repeated behavior or egregious, we're able to bring the situation and the student to the code of conduct committee that Dr. Brawlett earlier mentioned, where if they're moving to a final written warning or a potential dismissal review, that is not a one-person decision or one department decision. That goes to our system level code of conduct committee for a full review and decision made by committee vote.
Mr. LaMountain.
Yeah, just a point of clarification. I'm still trying to understand this. So the student doesn't have the ability to appeal it. If I got a written warning or a warning a year ago for something that I had no ability to appeal at that time, that's in my record and could be used on a second time if I committed another, what someone thinks might be in an inappropriate activity. I never had a chance to appeal the first one because no one could have said yes or no, I did or I didn't do this. But now it counts against me twice because I have another potential complaint that I never got a chance to appeal, that person may not even be at your institution anymore. Is that correct? I'm just trying to figure out your rationale for having a non-appealable written letter of anything to a student and not have it where the student could at least have a hearing, be heard, and appeal the process. I just don't know where that rationale is. In any school I've ever seen and, you know, read millions of catalogs and everything else, and this is something unique.
I guess I'll just step in, Ms. LaMountain, and say that, you know, we'll obviously take a look at the feedback. We don't think we're the only ones doing it this way. I think there are other schools that use an informal step one to just kind of remind people and let folks know, and then to accelerate it, and then it becomes more formal as Randy has outlined. But we can absolutely take that feedback. I mean, we're always learning and looking at opportunities to improve. So it's something that we can.
I certainly, as a regulator, would greatly appreciate it.
Go ahead, Dr. Wack.
You've got half and half is the problem here. You're trying to, the way that it looks from outside, you're trying to use one part of it as an informal thing, but it has formal ramifications on the student. That's where I think we're all struggling, right? If you say, just like I said, in my experience, I have a non-disciplinary letter of warning. I'm sending you a warning. It's non-disciplinary. If the FBI comes and background checks you, I'm not releasing it because it's non-disciplinary, but a disciplinary record is releasable. So therefore, if a student doesn't have the ability to appeal, it's not going anywhere that way, although I think we allow that, but whatever, right? So it's the ability that the student, you're putting something on a student's formal disciplinary record without them participating in it, I believe is the problem, and that's my
take. Yeah, that's exactly accurate, Dr. Leck, of where at least this committee's concern is right now in regards to the student not really having what has been described by the institution as an informal process that seems as a formal record-keeping process that could negatively impact the student, and the student has no ability to play a part in that consideration versus, yes, issuing, you know, hey, we had communication and we set an expectation and we're just noting that we had that type of conversation. So if this does start to become a regular occurrence, it may escalate to where we do initiate a more formal process that you then will have an opportunity to be in an appeal. But having it both ways, with potentially generating a warning and then releasing that warning, and the student not having an opportunity to be a part of that process or at least be heard, is is, I believe, outside of what the expectation would be for an institution. Maybe what we're hearing from you today is maybe a little different than how the policy is actually provided, but I would ask Mr. LaMountain, if you would follow up with the institution to better understand what their process is. It may very well be that this is not part of the student's record. The institution misspoke and merely was providing the student with guidance so that they could try and calm the situation down. I will say, although it's purely opinion, possibly before issuing a letter, it may be worthwhile to pick up the phone and have a conversation with the student to share with them maybe some concerns and see if some of that's avoidable. As we have seen with other institutions, usually there's a progression where if the student's having a challenge, the instructor or the facilitator will engage with the student to have a discussion and explain what their expectations are so that they can avoid it escalating. This seemed to very quickly jump to the student was sending, maybe in opinion, multiple emails or communications. The school took exception to that and issued a warning immediately without even having a conversation with the student. At least that's what it looks like from the documentation that the school provided. And now we understand that could be part of the student's record and non-appealable by the student, which seems to be outside of the practices and expectations that we as the post-secondary board would have. I can't reference a rule or statute associated with that, but I'm confident Mr. LaMountain in this review with you would have that opportunity to do that particular review.
And we'll take all the feedback. You know, we've got the feedback, and you know, our goal is to have a progressive process so that we aren't going immediately to a large scale code of conduct review for kind of initial feedback to students. But you know, we can look at how we're doing that and refine that based on the feedback you've provided.
Well, and certainly we encourage that progression and discussions. It just seems as though in this case, as you've articulated today, you've provided a written warning that is now part of the student's record, but the student has no opportunity to appeal that or be considered. And that is, I think, where we are taking exception today. If we have misunderstood that, or after the institution goes back and reviews that, if something has been misstated, then we would seek to understand that.
Yes, and I think that's something that we can provide as well. Is I think we need to review and confirm whether or not that information from the informal processes can ever be released. That's something that we need to take back and confirm.
Okay. We'll certainly ask Ms. LaMountain to do that follow-up. Dr. Leck, do you have any further questions at this time for the institution?
No, I don't think I have any further questions, but I do have a couple comments for you. I don't know when we do that though.
Okay. Well, why don't we progress then? I do see the student SS has their hand up. If I could, for the student, I will invite you back into the discussion. I want to just talk through the fact that when we're asking clarifying questions of the institution, we're trying to understand the situation in its totality. I think for you, you've probably heard some things today that would also, you might also want to follow up with the institution on as a result as well, in regards to this. The matter before us today, though, is in regards to the timeliness of the school and their response, meeting their expectations and what that looks like. So I do want to be clear that that is what we are evaluating today as a committee to determine, was the school communicating timely and appropriately, or were they outside of published standards or expectations that we have been able to determine here today? So I'll pause there and invite SS, if you would like to, if you have anything additional that you would like to share, you can do so at this time.
Thank you. There was a lot to try to take in from everyone. There is really no interactive process at South Southern University, in my opinion. I'm 64 years old, and I've been to many universities, state and private mostly. Never had anything like this brought up in my entire life. A disability ambassador. Disability ambassador is San Mateo County District. If this is going to be a psychology-run online program, you need to know what the disorders are that people could have. The main reason this all happened was from my academic advisor, who took on things personally. Oh, I'm emailing too much. How else am I supposed to talk to you? When you have an anxiety disorder, when I tried to send this information to the university so they understood, because I wasn't seeing a governing psychologist or PsyD over the program talking to me, they would understand the number of emails that are sent, because when there's a lack of time, it anxious up the disorder. So that said, this warning should have never gone out. But when it comes to the ombudsman, when are the university going to oversee the behaviors of the ombudsman? The ombudsman has talked to me on the phone in a manner that I thought was disrespectful. When I mentioned that I wanted to try and get a chair that is of black. So what does this have to do about race? Yelling. I go, what is it? What are you talking about? And I sent that to her so she understood the similarity, why that's important. Didn't get a response back. They may have it in their rules of them, responding in certain time frames, but do they actually act on it? And I appease you to please talk to my current chair. I'm hearing a lot of things that aren't quite true, and that really bothers me. I would not have gone through this process if there weren't things that were wrong. This is why the attorney that I'm part of a membership writes letters, reviews for certain things in academics, which I did. So that was brought up that I didn't hire him. So I guess I'm not deemed as being important. But when he reviewed the rules for appealing, he found it to be valid to appeal this. So that's off my record. The attorney that responded to me after a period of time, I felt her tone to me was also somewhat disrespectful. Has anyone ever picked up the phone to talk to me? No. Do I feel that my academic advisor at times takes things personally? Yes. When I explain and tell her things, how I'm doing and I'm doing this and I know that person, I feel a little bit of apprehension, or that she is not jealous, but she says, wow, I never could afford a car like that, which is what she said to me. Well, when I email my academic advisors and I'm dismissed, and I say dismissed when they don't respond after a period of time, to me, that's insulting. I'm supposed to have this connection. This is why I had a legal person review the procedures for the appeal for this, if it's appealable. And he found that it was. Now they're saying it's not to be removed. I've never had any type of academic anything. But yet when they go to look at the behavior of the former chair, we don't find anything wrong. That is just a bunch of stuff that I've never heard in my life. I would have never brought it up if there wasn't a problem. But nobody ever picks up the phone to talk to me. So I'm sorry to go like this, but I'm feeling very ill. And I just don't like being treated like this ever by an institution protecting their own self instead of really looking out for the student. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Student SS. I appreciate those comments, and certainly we want to create that forum for you. I think we can all agree that there's opportunity here to revisit in some particular areas that have probably come through this discussion. That said, and I want to set expectations again, the matter we're trying to understand today is was the school outside of their policies and procedures in regards to their timeliness of communications and that expectation. I think there's certainly more to be considered here, as I've already stated. But in regards to this, I would make a motion at this time. I haven't seen anything to support in this specific complaint where the school has been outside of their communication policy and the timeliness. So I would make a motion to dismiss that particular portion of the complaint.
Mr. Romano, so I have a couple of comments and I have a question. I'm not quite sure. Can we make recommendations to the institution as part of this part of this?
I'll defer to Mr. LaMountain and our Assistant Attorney General.
This is AAG Monahan. I would treat it just like a board meeting because okay. We're not an advisory board. I just wouldn't give any recommendations.
Can I put it as part of the motion? Can I suggest an amendment to the motion?
It's up to you, yeah.
Okay. You can certainly suggest.
I will, and then you guys can, you know, kill me later. All right. I actually would like to put a further motion, Mr. Romano, to dismiss the claim with the stipulation that the institution review their code of conduct policy and process. And
I think you can ask that they do that.
You can ask that they do that.
I don't think you can require it as part of your dismissal. But it sounds like, you know, you've made yourself clear, and I think, you know, they may be reticent to what you've already said, understanding that if they're not, it may come back before the board.
Okay, can I give one more that they probably haven't figured out, but I just think that might be a good idea is to just to change a counselor is probably an easy thing to help alleviate the situation. I would like the institution to consider doing so, that thing, because I have experience with that. It's just sometimes better.
Mr. LaMountain.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Romano, Dr. Luck. Ms. Diatley, we're in a motion, so we can't hear from you at this point. Just to be clear, in terms of our statute, rules, regulations, there's nothing in the discussion that we've had outside of the ADA issue and that there's really nothing there that is a regulatory, that is in statute. So certainly a direction from you, from the both of you to have staff communicate their concerns, to the institution about, because it's going to come back up. If this happens to one student, the likelihood of this happening again with a student having a non-appealable complaint is probably going to come back up. But that would be something that I could work with Ms. Diatley and the team at American Intercontinental University with, if that would be acceptable.
Yeah, I think certainly as a committee, we would guide you to engage in that discussion and encourage that piece of it. And my hope is the institution, again, needs to go back and evaluate. Maybe something was misstated today in regards to their process and how they document and what would be made available or not made available. Our hope is that the institution has heard that you've kind of created a situation where a student cannot be heard or considered, but you are potentially negatively impacting them. And I think we all would agree that's not something as educators we're ever looking to create for a student. We want it to be a collaborative process. It doesn't mean we'll always agree, but certainly, not affording the student the opportunity to be heard if something is going to become part of their written record to the degree that it would be used externally is something that we hope you would evaluate, hear us, and the intention behind it, and go from there. But we do have a motion on the table to dismiss based on the communication, and the fact that we did not see anything here today that would represent that the school was outside of their communication policies associated with that. And so, Dr. Luck, do I have a second on that?
Second.
Okay. All right. Any further discussion for the committee members, not the institutions or the student at this time, but for the just for myself and Dr. Leck. Any additional discussion, Dr. Leck?
No, sir. I've said my piece.
Okay. Thank you. With that, Mr. LaMountain, would you take a roll?
Sure. We have a motion and a second. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. By the vote of two ayes, no nays, that motion will pass.
Okay. Again, I want to reiterate, and I won't be lengthy on it. Our hope is the institution with Ms. LaMountain. You can have some further discussion around this. For the student, we understand that this is a limited scope for you, and there may be other matters that you will want to address with the school, and certainly you have that right and that ability to do so, and that is upwards and including if you identify something else where the school is potentially outside their policies and you want to issue a complaint with that, you can certainly do so. So we encourage you to continue to leverage that process from that standpoint. So this matter is closed, and I will now move to the next part of the agenda for that. And I apologize, Ms. Diatley, for these matters because of our procedural process. You can take your hand down from that standpoint. Just going back to the agenda really quick for the call to comment or call to public. The public input is encouraged. Presentation should be limited to 5 minutes. Please be aware, however, that the committee may not discuss, consider, or take action at this meeting on anything that is not scheduled on the agenda. During the meeting, additional public comments may be requested, this is generally not allowed. So with that, if there is any public that has a call to comment, please let me know. And hopefully you heard me on that because it just suggested I disconnected.
No, you're good. We heard.
Okay.
Any call to the public? Any comments? Going once? Going twice? Gone.
Okay. With that, we will adjourn the meeting. As always, board staff, thank you very much for your preparation of the materials and just all that you do for us. We realize that we're coming up on the end of the year. This will be our last committee meeting for the year, and certainly we've already had our last board meeting. But to you and to all the other participants, happy holidays for Student SS. Hopefully you feel better in the next several days. But thank you very much, everyone, for your participation, and we are officially adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to see you. Have a happy holiday.
Thank you, everybody. Everybody, too.
Bye. I can't get off.